RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It's Wednesday morning and we have now connected with New Zealand First MP Cabinet Minister Shane Jones. Shane, good morning. Thank you for joining us from what, the rear seat of the ministerial limo?
Hey, kia ora, folks. Yes, many is the secret that stays on the rear seat of the limo.
Yeah, what happens there stays there. I get it. Okay, first up, I saw reports that we did from your conference in Hamilton. Looked like quite a, well, an upbeat affair. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, well attended. Different crowd. There were a host of people that I think came along from the various regions, more concerned about energy resilience and growth and jobs. Historically, the party has attracted a lot of people who obviously are concerned about the welfare of the seniors community and immigration and other such matters. One thing I did notice this time, a whole bunch of people there were to ensure that we punctuated and underlined the growth gospel.
There was some talk there, I forget who it was, one of your people anyway, that kind of indicated that New Zealand First has almost supplanted or taken over in terms of, the Kiwi battler, what the Labour Party, the traditional Labour Party, kind of used to be. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, it's certainly the territory where Winston's taken us to. I mean, in all honesty, mate, what does the Labour Party now stand for? At one faction, you've got Willie Jackson, who is working on behalf of the Māori voters in the Labour Party, a way forward how they can not destroy a relationship with the Māori Party, whereas at New Zealand First, we want to replace the Māori Party with a source of common sense because we don't believe in the concept of Indigenous sovereignty. That's the essence of the Māori Party. And then you got Labour. Do they know where they stand with the Greens? Are they trying to out-green the Greens? And then you've got the people that are more interested in welfare politics and dividing the pie in terms of growing the pie. So for a while now, Winston has espied an opportunity because he doesn't believe there's a long-term future for the Labour Party, and we've got to steer in that direction. So it's a genuine attempt on our part to appeal to the hearts and minds of those Kiwis who no longer have a clear voice of advocacy.
Which is most of the population, I would have thought. I want to get on to the $100 billion future fund that Winston announced. I want to ask you a few questions about that shortly. But first to a few points that you made in your address. And I think you alluded to or mentioned the consolidation of the energy market. And you sounded quite, well, aggressive about that. It's like something was coming. Watch out, industry. Something is coming. Is that what you were kind of flagging?
Yeah. Well, obviously, we're going to make some short-term announcements as a part of our cabinet, and I'm championing those announcements. And I, for reasons that you and the listeners would understand, I can't breach that confidentiality. But at a deeper level, we actually want to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. We don't think that by having fractionalized the gentailers, i.e. the generators, and broken things up, that we've secured a better set of outcomes for affordability or long-term security. And we're fearful that industry, manufacturing and investors will move out of the regions if they can't be guaranteed affordable levels of energy pricing, or indeed guarantees that the energy will be there. Now, I don't want to sound too extreme on the matter, but it only needs a couple of bad winters with gross intermittency, and then you can beggar the reputation of your nation.
You also mentioned Marsden Point, which went down well with the people there. I heard the applauds. And you said something about insisting that the fuel companies have any buffer stocks actually stored here on our territory rather than somewhere else in the world. We'd have to, I don't know, come quickly if there was a problem. And you mentioned jet fuel. I think you probably intended to, or included in that, diesel fuel, obviously. So with Marsden Point out, perilous situation in the world, though that develops day by day, how much buffer do we have? How much of it is on shore and how much needs to be on shore? Can you take us through that quickly?
Yeah. There's two portions to that. We need more storage capacity for aviation fuel near our airport. I think 83% of all international travel or some stupendous figure like that goes through the Auckland airport at some point in the journey of an airline user. And to be honest with you, mate, our oil companies have been sluggish in delivering on that outcome. They promised to do it in 2019, and we're going to regulate to get that outcome. Not my go-to position, but they've had long enough as they've mucked around playing past the parcel. And then the identification of the level at which they ought to be storing petrol, diesel, and at a minimum, I want to see 28 days. Some days the level of fuel in New Zealand gets perilously low because they hide it from us. But I know from sources in the industry, it'll often be down to 5, 6, or 7 days.
Really?
And there have been instances it's been worse than that.
So we're just like a few days away, if anything went south, of no trucks turning up at places.
Well, once the Labor Party cancelled and closed down the refinery, that's the level of uncertainty and vulnerability that we now live with.
Didn't you say that Marsden Point area should be its own economic zone?
Oh, absolutely. That's something else that we'll be working on next year. It's not only diesel. I mean, I see scope for us to have a new power station at Marsden Point fueled by diesel.
Wow, okay.
Now, we already bring diesel in there, and that power station could easily be turned on and off to secure a higher level of certainty in the event that the wind doesn't blow, the sun doesn't shine. Now, of course, these waterlogged ferry turns and the Green Party, they won't like it. But as I said to you, I belong to New Zealand first, not climate first.
And quickly on geothermal, before we talk about the $100 billion future fund idea, and I know you've got to go places. So quickly on geothermal, that takes a while to put in place, but how much of a long-term energy option is that?
Well, I'm advised by both international experts and our own Kiwi experts that we have, from a scientific perspective, the resource under our feet. And other countries have gone down 13 kilometres in stupendous levels of depth, but we don't need to go to that length of penetration. What we do need, however, is the government to underwrite the exploratory work to ensure that we can overcome the engineering uncertainties. We have heaps of firms in New Zealand who are experts at drilling into the crust of the earth for the purposes of securing gas. Sadly, they're underutilized. So I'm developing a proposal with one or two of my key colleagues, and I'm going to place it in front of the coalition partners and our cabinet decision makers, and hope to be able to announce that something very positive prior to Christmas.
All right, and the $100 billion future fund idea that was presented by Winston, he referenced, the Singaporean model, which didn't they give birth to Singapore Airlines?
And many other things. I mean, the scale of the Singapore reservoir of capital rivals the size of the New Zealand economy. So they've done tremendously well at it. But look, there's a host of assets that the New Zealand government already owns. They're not well managed. When we do try and get better outcomes, the boards start to get all prissy and demand that we respect their commercial sovereignty and other such childish responses. I have to put up with that from the CEOs, from these gentailers. But anyway, I'll have more to say to them when we get closer towards electioneering next year. So the $100 billion fund, I don't see a big problem in terms of us creating $100 billion worth of capital within that fund if we can better use what we already own and then attract some additional capital from sources such as Singapore. So obviously Winston has a wee team working around him, putting the vital organs of this new beast in place.
And what would it be spent on? Give us an idea, map that out. What, new energy, projects.
Upgrading our infrastructure, new ways of dealing with waste, turning our waste into a source of energy, new ways also of powering our economy. And there's so many areas that have been allowed to, quite frankly, to wither on the vine. I mean, where are we going to find the money for the 5 or 6 hospitals? Answer me that. Every time we start to build a hospital, a la Dunedin, it takes forever and a day, and the costs seem to explode. Yet in Queensland, they're continually building hospitals to a single template. You get a blue one, a red one, an orange one, a green one. That's what you get. And the public's very happy. How do we know that? Because half my whānau are going backwards and forwards to that part of Australia. So it's time for a new paradigm and innovative ways of thinking about the capital. There's a couple of vulnerabilities, mate, that we need to cover off, i.e. ensuring that madman doesn't come back and decide to sell half the country. So you need certain protection measures. But we've got those in the sense that we've already been down that track with the Kiwi Golden Share in the days of telecom, until such time the public feels a lot more comfortable that the capital, how it's being used in New Zealand, that's historically been built up by them, is generating superior outcomes. And sadly, the public have been grossly let down by the gentailers after they were partially privatized, because they've been dominated by a narrow cast of executives who are more interested in shareholder dividends than they are with the energy security of our nation.
Watch out if you're one of them, by the sounds of things. Okay, just quickly on the $100 billion. What do you say to anyone who says, that's just New Zealand First getting ready for the next election and window dressing up for the, you know, for the nationalistic thinkers in the country? What do you say to them?
Yeah, I think we need a larger dose of nationalism, both in our economic and political and cultural thinking. After all, throughout the various nations of the world, they've got this concept of friendshoring. And basically that means people are moving back from the excesses of globalism and they're boosting the resilience of their own nations. You're seeing it in China, you're seeing it in America, various other locations around the world. And we're a tiny nation at the end of the railway track, proverbial speaking. So where we've got the resources ourselves, we've got to use them. We can't rely indiscriminately or, you know, vainly on other people to solve our problems. Now, $100 billion is a stupendous figure, but having said that, there was a time when we were bailing out Singapore when I was a young school child in the 1960s, and I'm actually going to Singapore with a wee delegation next week to discuss with the investment community and the political community up there, searching for new ways how we can create pacts of development with different leaders within the broader economic community of Singapore, not the least of which is for food. So we've got to change our thinking and stop putting ourselves down. And the people that have sought to deprecate Winston for this profound idea, look, they need to retire from the field of play and take their midget-like thinking back home and sit and sip cups of tea as they cry into the teacups about wasted opportunity. We're about making opportunity, buddy.
Shane Jones from the back of the ministerial limo. I don't know where you've been driving. I can't make it out, but it's somewhere. Thanks for coming on again, Shane.
Need to know basis. Ka kite, bye-bye.
All right. Shane Jones here at RCR.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.